Okay, the topic of this class is Parshas HaShavua, or more correctly, Seder HaShavua, because a Parsha is a paragraph in the Torah, either a Parsha Stuma or a Parsha Psucha, and there are many Parshios in every Sedra. So it really should be called either Parshios HaShavua or Seder HaShavua. And we're not going to cover the whole Sedra. And what I'm going to do is try to pick out some inyanim that I think are the lessons from them are very relevant and things that you should be aware of. Okay. I would like to get to know each and every one of you, but that's probably impossible, since I only teach you once a week for an hour, and I teach about 1,000 other people during the week. So it's very hard to get to know everybody's names, but I definitely will remember your faces and Mirza Hashem, get to know you over the year. You're all invited, not all at once, to my home for Shabbosos, but you have to check with my boss first and make sure that she doesn't have other people coming or whatever. My phone number is in the office. Oh, you want me to give it to you? Fine. My phone number is 08-9761-138. I live on a Moshav Matityahu, which I happen to be the rabbi of, and we have yeshiva there. And I would like to hear who each and every one of you are, but since we only have two classes before Rosh Hashanah, I'd rather make sure that we learn some Torah before that, and maybe after Yomim Noraim, after Yom Tovim, to hear who you are and where you're from. Okay. First thing from the Sedra is not in the beginning of the Sedra. We're not going to go in order. But the Torah, in speaking either about the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, or according to others, the mitzvah of tshuva, and according to others, the entire Torah itself is being spoken about. It says, Ki karov eilecha hadavar ma'od, the Torah is very close to you. Beficha uvilvavcha la'asoso. It's in your mouth and your heart to do. That alludes to the fact that there are three aspects to Torah. Machshava, Dibur, Maisa. Torah is done by thought, the ideas that you think about when you do the mitzvahs and so on, or you learn. And then there are the verbal part, making a bracha, right, things that you have to say, recite, Kriya Shema, and so on. And then there are mitzvahs maisios, things that you do. If I were to ask you, what would be the proper order for those things? Speech, thought, action. Put them in a logical order. What would you say? Yeah?
Machshava, Dibur, and
Maisa. Excellent. Why?
Because first one thinks, then whatever thoughts are says, and then he also does.
Okay. Perhaps another reason why. Other one second. Why that order? Because thought is the most spiritual. Speech is a little bit more physical. It's already something that is connection between the spiritual and the physical, and action is the most physical. And therefore, the order could be the opposite way. Start from the most physical, action, go to that which is semi-physical, speech, and then thought. Yeah? What did you want to say? Okay. I hear. Okay, you're both of you are going on how things work, how they evolve. Either they evolve from thinking and then you speak about it, then you do it, or sometimes you do it and then you speak about it and then you think about it afterwards. Okay, you're both right, and therefore the Torah is wrong, because the Torah doesn't say that order. The Torah says speech, thought, action, which is neither of those orders. So why does it work like that? Beficha, bilvavcha, and lasoso. It should have either be bilvavcha, beficha, lasoso, or lasoso, beficha, bilvavcha. I think the idea is the following. When a person thinks of something to begin with, it usually comes as a brainstorm. In the comic books, it's a light bulb lights up above your head. You're familiar with that? Okay, I'm not the only one who read comic books. Okay. And that is not something that you can put into words, quantify, or qualify. It's just an idea that pops into your head. That idea, that first thought doesn't count. Because it's not really crystallized, it's not really quantified, it's not really qualified. How do you qualify that thought and make it something that is real? By speaking it out. By verbalizing it. You get this idea, and then you speak it out and formalize it. And then once you speak it out, now it becomes a real concrete idea that you can now act upon. So that's the order. First, the first brainstorm doesn't count. Because if it remains at that, it's meaningless. So the first stage is take that brainstorm that you had, that idea, and verbalize it. And then once you verbalize it, then you'll be able to think about it properly. Then it becomes a real crystallized thought. And then once you have a real crystallized thought, then you will actually do it. And that's the order of how we do a mitzvah. We first make a bracha. The bracha is speech. And the bracha formalizes and crystallizes what you're doing. Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvosav v'tzivanu. Who commanded us? What the command is supposed to bring us to kedusha? What is the command? Right? Lechol matzah, alachilas matzah, alachilas morer, likboa mezuzah, whatever the mitzvah is. So you qualify and crystallize in speech what it is you're going to do. Now you can think about it and then do it. So that is the order of things. The truth is, this order is also related to another aspect of a person's intellect. And that is, there are three aspects to intellect. Chochma, Bina, and Das. And there are many ways of explaining them, but what I'm going to tell you is true. That doesn't mean that there aren't other ways of explaining it. Chochma is basically facts. Building up a database of facts. Bina is taking those facts and mulling over them and understanding their implications. That's called bone, to build. Bina. Mevin dover mitoch dover. You understand from the facts that you learned what their implications are, what comes from them. What do they imply? What do they mean? What can you learn from that? That's bina. And das is taking what you know and putting it into action. Deya is a lashon of chibur. Right? The word das has a connection to a very strong, intimate relationship with the thing. And that only comes when you actually put it into practice. So chachma is facts, knowledge. Bina is understanding the implication of that knowledge. And Das is applying it into the real world. That's Chochma, Bina, and Das. And that's Beficha. Beficha is you say the facts. Then you think about them and understand their implications. And then you put it into practice. Beficha, Bilvavcha, Lasosa. Okay, all of that was a preface to the following. If you think about it, the Yomim Tovim that we have follow this order. Pesach. Pesach is the hallmark of Chochma. Who is the star of Seder Pesach? The Chochem. What do we do on Pesach? Speak. In fact, the word Pesach hints to that. Pesach, a mouth that speaks. And Pesach, we use our mouth completely. By the Seder is only two things you do. Either you're talking or you're eating. That's it. That is what the Seder is all about. Right? And therefore, the main part of the Seder is Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, recounting the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Those are the facts. I build up my database about the fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam exists, that he's involved in the world. Those are the foundations of Yiddishkeit. That is what Pesach is, Chochmah. On Pesach, I receive the Chochmah by speech, by talking about the facts, by bringing out the data that I give over from generation to generation of things that we experienced in the past, and we speak about them, we bring them out, and we create the foundation of Chochmah. That's Pesach. Shavuos, there are no nitzvahs maisios, nothing to do on Shavuos. There are no nitzvahs to speak about. Not nitzvahs min haTorah, for sure. What is Shavuos? Kabbalas haTorah. Where is that? In the heart. Bina. Bina is the ability now to take those facts. Okay, there's a God. And he's involved in the world. And he did us tremendous favors and made us into a nation. So what? So therefore, we are subservient to him, and we should keep his Torah. That is the implication. That's called Bina. How do I know that Bina is the function of being able to be mekabel mitzvos? Because women were given an extra measure of Bina. Bina yisera nitna ba'isha yosir mi ba'isha. A woman was given extra Bina more than a man. And I didn't plan to explain that to you. But I will anyway, now, in parentheses. Okay, we'll just take a break, because I want you to understand what that means. Bina yisera nitna be'isha. Because that seems to contradict another Maimer Chazal, which says, Noshim daitin kalos aleihen. That women, their das is light. They're light-minded, simple-minded. Seemingly, that's the way many people translate it, which is wrong. We'll see in a second. So either women are simple-minded, or they're given extra bina, even more than men. And the truth is, if you understand both of those mamori chazal simply, they are terribly insulting to men. Think about it. Women are simple-minded, but they're smarter than men. So therefore, I have a vested interest to tell you that's not what it means. Like we said, everybody has two functions. They have Das, and they have Bina. Das is more of an analytical kind of function where you analyze information and come to the conclusion of what is factual about that information and what is not. That's called Das. The integration and analysis of information coming out with what is factual and what is not. That's Das. Now I have a database. Das. In fact, data and das have a connection, I think, to each other. Now, I have to be sensitive to know what are the implications of that das, of that chokhmah, I mean. What's the implications of that chokhmah that I have? Chokhmah and das here are interchangeable. Because we're not talking about three different things, just two. So in this respect, chokhmah and das are the same. And I'll prove to you that there is a case where they are the same. If you daven, how many of you daven Svard? Nusach Svard. How many in Ashkenaz? The rest of you, obviously. How many don't daven? No. In Nusach Ashkenaz, we say, Ata chonein la'odam das, umalamed la'enosh bina, choneinu me'idcha, deya, bina, v'haskel. And in Nusach Svard, it says, Chachma, bina, v'das. So if you take them together, the Chachma and the Deya are interchangeable. They're the parallel. So in this respect, even though when it comes to Chachma, Bina, and Das, Das means something else, here we're talking about Deya and Chachma, as opposed to Bina, Deya and Chachma, the same thing. So Deya and Chachma is understanding facts. Bina is understanding the implications. That's more in the heart. The same belibeinu lahavinu lahaskil. When you understand the implications, then you can accept the implications of that, those facts. So therefore, since a woman was given an extra midah of bina, not just more than men, It doesn't say bina yisera nitna beisha mi baish. Then it would mean a woman is given more bina than a man, or bina nitna beisha yoser mi baish. But it doesn't say that. It says bina yisera nitna beisha yoser mi baish. Two yosers. The first one is a woman was given extra bina more than her das. She has a greater capability, potential to bina than das. That doesn't limit her das. She could be a genius in das, and she's a genius plus in bina, potentially. She could be a total idiot too. Right? That's up to her. We're talking here about potentials. The potential of a woman for bina is greater than her potential for das. It doesn't limit either of them. It's just a relationship. Her quality for bina is stronger than her quality for das. And it's even stronger than a man's. Two things. It's stronger than her other capacity. Bina is stronger than her das. And it's stronger even than a man's bina. Two things. If you have a apothecary scale, one of these scales where you put something on this side and something on this side, and on the right side you have a ton of steel, and on the left side you have a ton of steel and a feather, which side is heavier? What? You don't trust me already. I hope that during the year you'll begin to trust me. I'm not trying to fool you. It's very simple. The one with the feathers is heavier. How much more heavy? One feather. That's all. The other side, the ton of steel without the feather, is lighter. How much lighter? One feather. Is a ton of steel light? Is it lighter than a ton of steel and a feather? Yeah. So the same Chazal that said, bina yisera nitna ba'isha, meaning a woman's bina is stronger, heavier than her das, said the same thing on the other side. Menela, noshim, daitan, kalos, alehen. In regard to themselves, their das is lighter. Doesn't limit her das in any way. It's just a relationship. If bina is greater, then das is lighter. That's all. Yeah? That what?
Why does that be written in a negative
way? It's not negative at all, if you understand it. It's just telling me a relationship. Noshim daiton kalos alehen. It's not a negative thing. It's telling me that if you want to know the capacity of a woman, her bina outweighs her das. That's all.
So why can't I just say it's straight like that? Why does that? I mean, this way you can understand it.
According to me, that's what it says. Right? It's because people misunderstand it doesn't mean that it says the other thing and I'm telling you something else. What I'm telling you is that is the way to understand. And if you read it the second time now, according to what I'm saying, that's what it says. And it's just two sides of the same coin. Since bina yisera nitna ba'isha, that one you like? That's positive? Same thing on the other side. Daitan kalos, alehen. That word alehen is always there. It's not daitan kalos, absolute. Daitan kalos alehen in relation to themselves. Relation to their bina. Same exact thing. That's all. In any case, the Gemara says, why does a girl become bas mitzvah at 12 and a boy has to wait till 13? Because bina yisera nitna ba'isha yosin bi ba'ish. That means that her capacity for kabbalas ha-mitzvahs is dependent on her bina yisera. And therefore, Shavuos, which is the holiday of Kabbalas Ol HaTorah, Kabbalas HaMitzvahs, depends on Bina. So Pesach is Chochmah, Shavuos is Bina, the lev. Pesach is Chochmah, which is with the mouth, speaking, and Shavuos is Belev, then thinking about the implications of that which you know, and taking it to its logical conclusion, and now I have to mekabel mitzvahs, and lastly put it into action. That's Sukkos. Sukkos is the yontif of das. We say on Sukkos, leman das kolayim ame haaretz. Sukkah is das. Leman yedu doroseichem kibes Sukkos oshavti. Sukkos revolves around the union of das. This das, when it's in relationship to chachma, bina, and das, das means putting it into action. Now put it into action. And Sukkos is the yontif of action. So many korbanos and sukkah and esrig and lulav, mitzvahs maisios. So that's beficha is Pesach, Bilvavcha is Shvuas, Lasoso is Sukkos. Okay, now, there's a very big question that everybody asks, and that is, why is Sukkos after Yom Kippur? We sat in Sukkos from the time we went out of Mitzrayim. So Sukkos should have come immediately after Pesach, or at least immediately after Shavuos. Why does it wait till after Yom Kippur to have Sukkos? What does the Sukkos have to do with the winter? We sat in the Sukkos in the summer too. And the Sukkah protected us not just from the rain of the winter, but also from the sun of the summer. So we could easily have Sukkos right away. There are many answers to that question. I'll tell you what I think. And that's the following. In order for these three Yomim Tovim to really be effective, they have to be in that order. You first have to start with Pesach, which is Chachma. From Pesach and the Chachma, you come to Shavuos, which is Bina. And after you have the Chachma and the Bina, then you can have the Das. It has to be that order. You can't have the Das before you have the Chachma and the Bina, and you can't have the Bina before you have the Chachma. So you need Pesach to prepare you for Shavuos, and you need Shavuos and Pesach to prepare you for Sukkos. That would have been fine, and really, Sukkos should have come immediately after Shavuos. There's a problem, though. Immediately after we makabel the Torah and we gained that Bina and the Chachma, we lost it, because we served the ego. And the Chet HaEgel basically diminished the Chachma that we got on Pesach and the Bina that we had on Shavuos. So they had to be compensated for. So when the Rabbeinu Shel Olam agreed to forgive us for the Chet HaEgel, he also had to compensate for the Chachma of Pesach that was lost and the Bina of Shavuos that was lost. So he gave us two other Yomim Tovim. Two new Yomim Tovim. And it could be those Yomim Tovim would have been there anyway, but they took on new meaning. And it's clear from the Rishonim that both Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur have to do with the Kapara of the Chet HaEgel. Yom Kippur is clear. Yom Kippur was the consummation of the Slicha for the Chet HaEgel when we got the Luchos Shnios. Second Luchos were given on Yom Kippur. It's one of the reasons we celebrate Yom Kippur, and the Rabban Shem said on Yom Kippur that was Salachti Kidvorecha, that the forgiving for the Chet HaEgel. So Yom Kippur for sure is there because of the Chet HaEgel, because of the Kapor of the Chet HaEgel. And the Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim in Rosh Hashanah, says that that Kapara for the Chet HaEgel began already from the beginning of the year, that new year of Rosh Hashanah. Those 10 days were the days of the final kapara for the Chet HaEgel. So in Rosh Hashanah is also included. So those two new Yomim Tovim came about, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, because of the effect of the Chet HaEgel on Pesach and Shavuos. Our Chochmah was diminished that we gained on Pesach by the Chet HaEgel, and the Bina that we got on Shavuos was diminished. So you needed two other Yomim Tovim to compensate. Think about it, Rosh Hashanah. What is Rosh Hashanah? Again, talking. Rosh Hashanah is the longest Shemoneh Esrei of the year. Malchios, Zichronos, Shofros, we do a lot of talking on Rosh Hashanah. There's not too many mitzvahs maisios. We're all involved with our mouth. Either talking, and here it's not eating, but it's blowing a shofar with your mouth. So Rosh Hashanah is beficha, just like Pesach. Rosh Hashanah is getting the facts. Malchios, Zichronos, Shofros, the Rabbanu Shalom exists. He punishes and rewards. That's Zichronos. And Shofros, and he appeared and let the world know what his will is by Matan Torah, through the Nevi'im, and so on. That's the Shofar. So that is collecting information. Just like on Pesach, we collected the information of the fact that the Rabbanu Shalom exists, and he's involved in the world, and he rewards, and he punishes, and whatever. So that's the exact same thing we do on Rosh Hashanah. So Rosh Hashanah compensates for what we lost Pesach. It strengthens what was weakened on Pesach by the Chet HaEgel. Yom Kippur is Kabbalah Satorah. Exactly that in. It's the second Kabbalah Satorah. Just like Shavuos was Kabbalah Satorah, and Yom Kippur is tshuva, which is mostly in the heart. That a person has to do tshuva means even though you have to say vidui and you have to start doing the mitzvahs properly, but lemaisa the ikar is that you regret what you did and you're makabel in your heart not to do it again. So that is the ikar of tshuva, and the ikar of Yom Kippur is Kabbalah Satorah, the re-Kabbalah Satorah, which is called tshuva. So it comes out that Rosh Hashanah compensates for Pesach, and Yom Kippur compensates for Shavuos. Once you have Pesach and Shavuos back to their original status, now you can have Sukkos. Without that, you can't have the Das. You can't put it into practice. So originally, it could be that Shavuos should have come right after Pesach. Right after Pesach, or at least right after Shavuos. But it couldn't because of the Chet HaEgel. So you needed two other Yomim Tovim to compensate for what was lost by the Chet HaEgel. Once you have those two other Yomim Tovim, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, now you can have Sukkos. Now you can have the Das. Okay. Any questions on this? We'll go to another topic. Okay, next. In the beginning of the Sedra, says the following. A person who says, I'll do whatever I want, I'm not interested in accepting this bris and committing myself to Shmiras HaTorah, Ki b'shrirus libi eilech, my heart is like a muscle, I can do whatever I want with it, and I will do what I want. Shalom yieli, and nothing's going to happen to me, I'll get lost in the crowd, and the Rabbanu Shel Olam won't be makbid on me, because everybody else will be tzaddikim, and I'll do what I want. Leman svos harova es atzmeya. A person who says that and totally gives off from himself the yoke of Torah, so leman svos harova es atzmeya, the quenched will overpower the thirsty. It doesn't make as much sense in Hebrew. It doesn't make too much more sense in Hebrew than in English. What does it mean? The thirsty, the quenched. What's it talking about? Person who totally gives into his Yetzer Hara and does not bother to try to make the right choices. And just that every once in a while he's nichshol, like all of us are. But he doesn't care. He'll do whatever he wants. Whatever comes up, that's what he's going to do. What happens to that person? Leman svos harova es atzmeya. So Rashi says what it means is the following. Normally, if you do something unintentionally, you're not punished as much as if you would do it intentionally. There's reason why there is still some kind of onus for unintentional, either because it's not totally an onus, it's not totally an accident, you were negligent, but you're not doing it on purpose. Different thing. That's only if you would have known what you're doing, you wouldn't have done it. For instance, person wakes up Shabbos afternoon and he thinks it's Sunday. Ever happened to you? Go to sleep after the challend, you wake up in the afternoon and think it's Sunday morning? Happens. Okay, sometimes you don't even know where you are or if you are or whatever. Some people say that the biggest proof to Trias HaMesim is the fact that you can get up after the challend altogether. So you wake up and you're totally don't know where you are, what you are. You think it's Sunday morning, turn on the light. You're just Mechal Shabbos, B'shogeg. So in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, you'd have to bring a korban, but you don't get skila, you wouldn't get death penalty for being Mechal Shabbos. It was unintentional. What happens, though, if you are a Mechal Shabbos every Shabbos? You don't care about Shabbos. And you wake up one Shabbos afternoon and think it's Sunday and turn on the light. You're not going to be exempt from Chil Shabbos. Because even if you would have known it's Shabbos, you would have turned on the light. You didn't turn it on because it was Sunday. That was irrelevant to you. You turned it on despite the fact that it was Shabbos. So you happened to make a mistake and think it was Sunday. But if it would have been Shabbos, you would have done it too. That's not called a shogeg. So therefore Rashi says, if you are careful and you try not to do things that are wrong, and you make a mistake, so it's counted as a mistake. But if you don't care, then even if you made a mistake, you're punished as if you did it on purpose, because the mistake is irrelevant. You would have done it anyway, even if you knew that it was something awesome. So that's one way of saying Leman Svos HaRova Es Hatzmeya. There's another idea. This is very eye-opening to what this kind of effect on the generation we live in. It's not only our generation, but here it's pretty clear. I remember when I was about 5 or 6 years old, I don't think older than that, I remember there was a big party made in Hollywood. I wasn't invited, I wasn't in Hollywood either. But there was this little box we had in the house with a very small screen where with black and white you could see what was going on in Hollywood. And on that little box, those days it was a little box and it was all in black and white, I remember watching this party that was going on in Hollywood. It was hosted by a person named Michael Todd. He was the producer of a movie, a very grandiose movie called Around the World in 80 Days. And it was, in those days, it was something special. And when they finished that movie, he made a party for all of the cast and for all of his friends. And it was so lavish that they broadcast it on television. And I remember watching it. And they were describing, right, this gigantic party, this lavish party. And then they were describing what they were eating. What were the foods that were being served? And I remember that one of the foods they served was chocolate-covered ants. Not uncle ant variety, but the little six-legged variety on the ground. Okay. And I thought to myself, wow, they must have spent so much money on this party, they didn't have money for food. They had to go around collecting ants and put chocolate on them to eat. Such a nebuch. It made, till today, made an impression on me. Now, why in the world would people who have so much money want to eat chocolate-covered ants? It's not one of the bigger taivas that people have. You know, when you walk in your kitchen and you see that it's infested with ants, you don't get out a fork and knife and say, wow, lunch, right? You get out the raid and you kill the ants. That's what a normal person does. Nobody goes and gets chocolate spread, right, and puts it over the ants. It's absurd. So why in the world would anyone at a big banquet want to eat chocolate-covered ants? I'll tell you why. Because that's what it says, L'mansfos harova esatzmeya. People have a normal Yetzer Hara. There are natural Yetzer Haras that we're all born with, and we have to control them, use them when they're proper to use. An appetite. Everybody has an appetite. You didn't have an appetite, you'd die of starvation. So the Rabbanu Shem gave us what's called a Yetzer Hara for food. It could be used in a very good way. But if you don't control it, inevitably you're going to eat the wrong things at the wrong time, in the wrong way, and that's already bad. So the Yetzer is an appetite, it's a desire, it's a drive, it's normal. It's what you're born with for a good reason. And all the drives that a person has, the normal, natural ones, are meant for the good. They're meant to be used in a certain way at a certain time, in a certain amount, whatever. If you use them the way they're supposed to be, then they're a mitzvah. The whole you can serve the Rabbanu Shem with those Yetzers, with that Yetzer Hara too. Right? The Yetzer between the genders is made for marriage, and it could be Kedusha. If it's done the wrong way, at the wrong time, then it could be the worst tumor. Food, the drive for food, the same thing. And all the Yetzarim a person have, the natural, normal ones that you're born with, can be used for the good. A person, however, who does whatever he wants, and he gets so much used to giving into his Yitzarim in the wrong way, so then the purpose of doing that is to have a thrill, to enjoy yourself. But there's a very sad thing, that the more you indulge in something and you become accustomed to it, the more not only do you not get enjoyment from it, but familiarity breeds contempt. And you even don't like it at all. If you take, imagine if you had your favorite food. Okay, imagine what that food is, whatever it may be. And you would have to eat it breakfast, lunch, supper, in between snacks every day. That's all you would eat. How long do you think it would take before you get disgusted from it? Because, and surely it wouldn't be your favorite food anymore. Right? Because it's overdone. You get used to it. And it doesn't have that pleasure anymore. And since people who give into the Yetzer Hara completely are looking for pleasure in any way they can get it, so once they've done everything and none of that now brings them pleasure, they have to find other things to do that aren't normal. So they start eating chocolate covered ants. After you've eaten everything and nothing anymore has that charge of pleasure to you, so now you have to find things that are not normal to do. And it works with all the appetites that a person has. You hear about things that people do, right, with other appetites, with other drives, that are totally out of the realm of logic. Why in the world would a person want to do such things? Where do they get a Yetzer Hara for that? The answer is, the things that the Yetzer Hara is quenched for, in other words, you don't really want to do. You don't have any desire for these things normally, but when you give in to the Yetzer Hara, then the quenched things overtake the things that you're thirsty for. The things you're born with thirsty for, that you have a desire for. Those are normal. But when you give in to the Yetzer Hara, then the quenched things, the things that you're not thirsty for under normal circumstances, become also things that you become thirsty for, because the things that normally will give you pleasure, if you indulge in them, don't give you pleasure anymore. And that's the whole drug culture. People have to create new means to give themselves pleasure in life, because the normal things in life don't give them pleasure anymore. I've, you know, been there, done that. Nothing is exciting anymore. So they have to create artificial means to have an exciting life. And then they end up ruining their lives completely. But that's another meaning of Laman Sfos HaRava Esatzneya. The things that under normal circumstances, you are quenched. Your Yetzer Hara is quenched to them. Not interested in them. Normal people don't have those kind of desires. But if you give in to your Yetzer Hara and the normal desires become commonplace, then the things that are normally you don't desire, now you are going to desire, because those are the only things that give you pleasure. Those are the things that are no longer commonplace. And when those things become commonplace, you have to look somewhere else. Until you end up doing things that are totally illogical and way out. And that's for normal people, to look at people that indulge in things that, why in the world would anybody want to do such a thing? Because the normal things already became commonplace. Okay. Next. Another part of the Sedra. Torah says the following, that the Rabbanu Shel Olam, Klal Yisrael, is going to be Chote, they'll be over there with the Zora, do terrible things, and the Rabbanu Shel Olam is going to punish us. And after the Tzoras come, a lot of calamities will come to the Jewish people, and they'll say the following, Al ein Eloi bikirbi mitzauni haro sa'ila. You know why these tzoras are happening? Because God isn't with me anymore. Because I chased him away. Because I did all these averas and the Rabbanu Shem left me, and that's why all these tzoras are happening. Now you would think that is pretty much a confession that I'm wrong. That I know why these tzoras came. But because of what I did. That's a tremendous madrega. The Rambam says that's the whole purpose of a tainus. And why when tzoras happen, we fast and we blow shofar, blow chatzotzros, in order to say, this isn't just happenstance. It's not just a coincidence. Things don't just happen in this world. But they're a result of things that are not right. If I do things that aren't right, then what happens is I make the world a place that isn't right. And I suffer because of it. So an admission that this isn't just coincidence, it should be a tremendous thing. Klal Yisrael have reached that. It says after that, yeah.
But it shouldn't really be a tremendous thing if you're saying that Hashem is just as much with you once you sin and when you don't sin.
That
what? Hashem is just as much with you as when you
sin. Oh, hold on, hold on. Hold on, you're about 10 steps ahead of me. So you would expect that right after that, the Rabbanu Shem says, okay, I'm going to forgive you now. Because that's what the Tochacha in Parshas Bechukosai says. If you'll say, the Holachtem imi keri, the Rambam says, mean, it's only coincidence. All these sorrows are happening, but it's only coincidence. You know, it's political reasons, social reasons, whatever, economic reasons. That's why the sorrows are happening. Not because I did anything wrong. It's not Hashgacha, it's not the Rabbanu Shel Olam. So then the Rabbanu Shel Olam says, I'll punish even more. But if you realize that it's coming because of your Chatoyim, so that's a tremendous Hakara. What does it say right after that? V'anochi haster astir ponai mehem. I'll doubly hide my face from you after that. So all the Mefarshim ask, why? Here, you're already admitting that you're the cause of your tzaras. So the Rabbanu Shem should forgive you, not make worse. So they're all different pshatim. The Ramban says, Enochinami. The person, what's it called, is modeh that it's his fault. But he hasn't yet really done 100% tshuva. He's maharer b'tshuva. He begins to think about the fact that I'm the cause of all of this. But he hasn't yet decided he's going to stop doing all of this or whatever. So he's not going to be forgiven completely. But after that, it doesn't say more tzaras are going to come. Just, I'm going to hide my face from you. And that's called Hester Pnei HaGeula. You may return to Eretz Yisrael. It won't be the Geula yet. But I'm going to hide the face of the Geula. You're not going to really see the results, but I'm not going to give you tzaras. So the Ramban says, Enochanami. It is a positive thing. But it's not yet the completion, so the kapara is not going to be complete. That's one pshat. The Chassidish pshat is, V'anochi haster astir. I will hide the hiding, which means a double negative. If you hide the hiding, that means that you're going to now become open. So the Rabbanu Shalom is saying, basically, I will reward you now and stop hiding my face. I'll hide the hiding of my face and everything will be okay. That's not the pshat, pashu pshat in the psukim. The Sfarno says something astounding. He says what you said. At least what I understood you saying. The Sfarno says like this. Sfarno says, that which they say, because God isn't with me, that is why I'm getting these tzaras, is in itself apikursis. Why? Because God is always with you. The Rabbanu Shalom never leaves you. The Rabbanu Shalom is there, hashochein itam besoch tu masam, no matter what you do, because if the Rabbanu Shalom wouldn't be there, you wouldn't be there. In order for us to exist, we need the Rabbanu Shalom's ratzon that we should exist every second, that our heart should beat every second. So God doesn't leave us. He doesn't abandon us. What happens? I abandon Him. I turn my back on Him. I built a mechitza between me and Him. So I separated between my heart and the Rabbanu Shalom by building a wall. That's a wall I created. God's still there. He didn't go anywhere. You're the one who turned your back on Him. You're the one who abandoned Him. He's still there. He never leaves you. Says the Sfarno, what difference does it make? Lamaisi, you left Him, He left you. It's all the same thing. It's not. Because if I say that the Rabbanu Shel Olam left me, then in whose court is the ball now? In His. He has to come back. I didn't do anything. He left. Right? So if He wants to come back, He'll come back. If He doesn't want to come back, that's up to Him. I don't have to do anything. I just have to wait for the Rabbanu Shel Olam to change his mind and come back to me. But if I left him, then the ball's in my court. And I have to do something. I have to daven. I have to do tshuva. I have to start doing mitzvahs again. So it's in my responsibility. But if I put the responsibility on a Kodesh Baruch Hu, al ein eloa bekirbi, it's because God isn't with me, then let him do what he has to do. I can't do anything. But if it's because I abandoned him, I turned my back on him, I created a mechitza between me and him, so then I have to do so. Tear down the mechitza. Turn around. Turn towards him. Come back to him. It's you are the one who has to act. That's what the Sfarno says. So it's not a confession. It's not a reasonable confession. Confession is, what's it called? Al-chei chechatanu lifanecha. All the sins that we do are lifanecha. You're there, Rabbanu Shel Olam. You didn't go away. You're there when we do the sin too, and you don't abandon us. But I turn my back on you. I did that chet lifanecha, so I have to do something. I have to do tshuva. I have to repair the situation. That's why after that comes something negative. Okay. The time for one more thing. No. Yeah. He'll cover up the covering.
Right.
Yeah. So they're not medayik in the fact that the Rabban Shalom or me, I admit that that tsaris come because I didn't do what I was right, and because the Rabban Shalom left me, they're not medayik who left and who didn't leave. I admit that the Rabban Shalom is punishing me for something I did wrong. It's not just a coincidence. Yeah. That?
So the Tashkafa, is that going to be the topic, or is it going to be studio and Parashat?
I'll tell you the truth. Last year, I don't read papers that much. In other words, that they send me. Last year, and the year before that, and the year before that, the first class was Parashat HaShavua, and the second class was Yisodos in Hashkafas HaTorah. I assumed that that's the same thing this year. But what they must have done, if you're asking me the question, is because they made this class, mandatory, so it doesn't make sense to have the voluntary class first and then the mandatory class, because otherwise you have to wait around for the mandatory class and the ones who are volunteering come later. It makes a lot more sense to make the mandatory class first. This is what I assume based on what you're asking me. And therefore, the ones who want to wait around for the voluntary class will be here for the second class, but it's not fair to make the first ones wait around for the voluntary class. So therefore, they changed it this year, and I don't know if they told me, or they told me but didn't tell me, just sent me a piece of paper, which I discounted because I've been doing this for years. So on your paper, it says this class is supposed to be Yisodos Bashkofas HaTorah? What? That's the mandatory one? Okay. Now, I assume from the numbers that are here, this is the mandatory one. Okay. So, the Yisodos in Hashkafas HaTorah that you learned today is you should always be medayik and read papers they send you. Next time in Mirtz Hashem, we will switch, and in the second class, which is voluntary, we'll speak about Parshas HaShavua, and in this class we'll speak about Yisodos of Yiddishkeit, and next time we'll probably speak about Rosh Hashanah, next Monday, Mirtz Hashem.